Does the world really need men? The answer is not as self-evident as most of the guys here assume. It's as many of the women have already reacted. It's an open question. First of all, there is in vitro fertilization. And, well, for the moment anyway, before the government changes and the Vatican has its way. But for the moment, there's in vitro fertilization, and it is clear that the world does need turkey basters, but not necessarily men. There's also cloning, and there are ways that an ovum can be made fertile without the participation of men. So that if men aren't biologically required to propagate the species, I'm trying to think of a delicate way around this. Men could be in the same position with a certain male attribute as the sperm whale is, and that is an endangered species that really is not greatly appreciated, and possibly for some cause. Men in television and the arts, two different subjects, as well as in a lot of social commentary, are usually portrayed these days as stupid, violent, gassy, and otherwise driven by the lower chakras. How's that? If you watch television and read important social commentary, it's very difficult to see what the case is for our continued existence on the planet. In fact, I might be willing to participate in voting us off of the island. It's true. We take up, on the average, more space, consume more calories, tend to be more violent, and those great virtues that men have of bravery and of self-sacrifice and of cooperating in order to hunt down the bigger, stronger, swifter animals in the jungle or in the pampas may not be the best survival skills for getting humanity through the 21st century. The survival skills that got us out of the primordial swamp and we are the descendants of the winners may not be the best things to have its opposable thumbs on various nuclear triggers. So what kind of case can we make for men? Well, obviously I think that there's some use for us. On the average, we're pretty necessary for putting the pitcher up on the top shelf and getting it down, although, to be fair about it, that could be genetically engineered and no longer be an average male benefit either. There are just too many ways of getting around the issue of what men are good for. But there's one thing, and that is being fathers. And being fathers is a lot more than being sperm donors. For all too many men, being sperm donors is what fatherhood means. It's about production, it's about the hunt, it's about conquest, and it isn't about parenting nearly enough. I, of course, as a father, as a grandfather, now understand that being a father and a grandfather is one of the two highest callings of humanity, because it's important responsibility in terms of how we spend our lives and how we spend our time. And spend is an apt metaphor, because I wish that I had had, as I think so many people of any gender wish, I wish that I had had wisdom at a young age. But there doesn't seem to be a shortcut to wisdom. It seems to take time to find out what is important in life. And I say this not in an attitude of abject regret and guilt, but just in the sense of reflection of what time has come to mean. As the pile of my yesterdays is clearly larger than the pile of my tomorrows, time becomes, as it does, as almost anything that we spend does, more precious for its relative scarcity. And so the wisdom that comes with age, you just can't get around and make a shortcut and do time travel and find some kind of hyperdrive to wisdom. It is trial and error, and I don't think anyone of the higher species really is born with all of the parenting skills that we need to have. It's something that is acquired. When I think of my dad, what he gave me most of all that was so important to me was time and a sense of who he was and a sense of what he was enthusiastic about. When I think back on those moments that were for me peak experiences, one was being taken out of school to see the first Dodger game in the Coliseum. And that was very exciting, and I sat next to Joe Louis, and that was very exciting also. He also took me out of school to see the first Angel game in the what was then Los Angeles's Wrigley Field. And that was sharing his time and his enthusiasm with me. I was at opening day at Dodger Stadium, and I was also at that fabled Roy Campanella night in the L.A. Coliseum, the first time I'd ever seen 90,000 people at night. The lights went out and people struck a match to salute the fallen Dodger hero as he was wheeled to the pitcher's mound. And I had a sense of that energy. My father also took me to car races because they were my passion, not baseball. And so we spent many evenings at Ascot and Gardena, and he even took me to the Indianapolis 500. Not at all his passion, but a respect for me and for what my passions were. A spending of his time and the knowledge of who he was and what he cared about. That the sports thing did not completely take with me. I am not a fanatic. I'm a, what we call, a high holy day baseball, football, basketball fan, which is at the very final game of the playoffs, if I don't have a dog in the fight, I might watch and I might not. But it was the time. There was something else that he did that was terribly important and influential to me. When he would go to the barber shop, now for those of you of another generation, barber shops are places where men used to go and to have hair cut. The word stylist didn't exist. We had our shoes shined. Some people had a manicure. And that was about it. Usually not a shampoo, sometimes a shave. But my dad would go, and he was a storyteller. And he was a very gregarious person. And people would gather around him as he told stories and joked and laughed. And I was very touched by his ease with people and the naturalness of his vivaciousness. But perhaps the most important part of that whole barbershop experience was the shoeshine man, Mr. Finley. Mr. Finley was an institution in Westwood, one of the smartest, best educated intellectuals I ever met, and the first intellectual outside my family. My father was a very bright man and a very friendly man, but he was not a book-learning person. He would not have discussed with me what Finley did. And Finley and my dad and I used to go out for lunch. It was part of our ritual of the haircut. And we would go out for lunch, and people would sometimes stare because in the 50s, In West LA, there wasn't an awful lot of socializing across the cruel and arbitrary lines of race and of class. Finley was the man who introduced me to Immanuel Kant, to the dialogues of Plato, who pointed out to me something that you've heard in sermons. He continues to touch me and through me touch you, and that is the relationship of the Golden Rule and its various formulations to Kant's categorical imperative. He was a remarkable human being and touched and touches my life still. After my father died and I graduated from the university, it was Finley whom I met and went back, and he took me out to lunch and talked to me about going into grad school and helped guide me into going into grad school at USC in philosophy. We are parents to those to whom we open up our hearts and spend our time. My father gave me the respect of his time and paying attention to what I cared about. Finley gave me the respect of seeing an intelligence within me and helping to guide it and shape it. And that is something that makes him, in a sense, my intellectual godfather, whose memory I cherish. These are things that are open to all of us, male and female, to our own seed and to the children who are our intellectual heritage and seed, and will carry with them the choices that we make of how we spend our time, spend our attention, spend our love with them. And the nice thing about love is it's a demand system. It replenishes itself as it is given. It's not finite. It is not to be hoarded jealously or given to one and not another because there just isn't enough. As we learn to love and to give our time, time expands. Love grows, and we get better at seeing the worth of other people, at giving them time, at giving them respect. It is terribly, terribly important. When I think about what it is that I have given to my children and grandchildren, again, it's time. Didn't go to all the baseball games and football games and basketball games. Did take my son to Harlem Globetrotters, but I'm not sure that fulfills the conditions for the basketball merit badge because it's entertainment, it's theater. But we did go to a lot of theater. We went to a lot of music from Wynton Marsalis, and he has that love of theater. There were trips. And the poet, I think, really said it the best. Of the sins of commission and omission, the ones that we regret the most, I find personally and in terms of counseling, are the sins of omission. The trips not taken. The museums not visited. The events not attended because we were busy. The television that stayed on because we didn't want that embarrassing silence that might happen during a meal if there's no television on. If I had life to live over again, which, as not being a Hindu, I don't know that I do, but I might be happily surprised, it would be to disconnect that television. Took lots of trips, visited lots of museums. I think maybe one of my proudest moments when we were on sabbatical, there are two. One was we couldn't make up our mind whether to go back home to where we were living in the south of France or to go to Spain. And my son Adam said, well, let's go to Spain. I said, okay, what the hell, let's go to Spain. And right at that curve, right at the fork in the road, we turned right and went to Spain. He got a big kick out of that. He also got a really big kick out of being annoyed with me as I dragged him, sometimes kicking and screaming, through various museums in England and in France. And he wrote an absolutely brilliant commentary called The Bataan Death March of Culture. And frankly, I found it, I was too proud of his wit to be offended by his observation. And I said, yes, I've done my job. It's more than sperm donor. I've passed on something of worth. Irony, sarcasm, criticism. But it's me, you know? No genetic testing necessary. He's got my wit. It is time. It is time that we spend that justifies our place on the planet. Planting seeds is relatively easy and can be a lot of fun. But nurturing them, tending the garden of our own seed and those volunteers that show up in the gardens of our lives, that's where we earn our keep as men, as fathers, as mothers, as human beings, because they will live what they learn, they will learn what we live, and they will know us by how we spend our precious time with them.